My name is Bruce Norris, and we are with Randy Grigg. Randy's been a longtime investor. I really consider him a friend. I've known him for many years, have a lot of respect for him and all the things that he's done in the business and the way he's conducted business. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to interview him today. Randy, welcome.
Thanks, Bruce.
I almost say welcome to our show, but this is it's a different purpose this time. It's not a radio show, but it's kind of trying to help other people that are trying to get in the business look at the blueprints of different people and see what they might have similar for themselves. So what did you do before real estate?
Real estate, actually, I was going to school. I actually got a master's degree at UC Riverside and then took a job with FMC selling chemicals to farmers and checking their fields. And we moved to Bakersfield when we got the job. And almost immediately, we bought a house, this is to live in, for 37,500, 1,000 square feet. That was about the market in 1977. And then I bought a rental house that same year, two bedroom, one bath, for $24,000, I believe, $3,000 down, 8% interest, and the owner financed it for 20 years, amortized over 20 years. So I got right into it.
How old were you right then?
I think I was around 21.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's really young. Were you raised in a family that paid attention to real estate as investing?
My parents actually did a little bit of investing and nothing major, but they owned a few houses and some apartments. But I didn't know anything what they were doing. They were doing it, and I didn't even really know what they were doing, you know.
Okay. So yeah. That wasn't part of the family discussion, man. When you grow up, you want to do this or that.
No, because they ended up selling them and putting it in stock. So I they weren't real excited with the management part of the real estate.
Okay. What did they do for a living?
My dad actually was a salesman. He sold for a trucking company where they would sell the business of trucking goods. And my mom was a secretary. She worked full-time as a secretary.
Okay. So as you were growing up, how would you describe what you were expected to do for a living?
My parents were real open that way. My dad was very hardcore. He was a tough disciplinarian. And so he basically I think they wanted me to go to school because they thought I could make more money if I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of pushed me into, you know, maybe you could be a doctor, maybe you could be a dentist. So that's what I started with. I was a biology major in college. But I ended up in agriculture, but it's the same idea. It has to do with science.
Was the idea that you probably will work for a company rather than be on your own?
Yes, definitely. You know, that was sort of the old school thoughts in general, I think, back then was, you know, you get a good education, and with that good education, you're going to get a good job, and then hopefully you'll get the gold watch when you retire 30 years later, you know, that kind of mentality.
Right. So now back into this job as you're selling chemicals, that's something you stayed with for how long?
Well, actually, 1 year. I worked for FMC for about just over a year, selling chemicals and checking the farmers' fields for insect pests. And I didn't like working for anyone. It took me about a year to figure that out. So I actually started my own business where I was checking the farmers' fields, but I wasn't selling the chemicals. So I was charging a per-acre fee, and then the grower could go wherever they wanted to buy the chemicals. So typically they'd bid them out and get the best price.
Okay.
So I did that for about 30 years, quite honestly. Yeah.
That's a long time. Now,
Yeah.
But okay, so you had your own business doing exactly what you were doing, or pretty close to for doing with that company.
Mm-hmm.
But you had so was real estate a side business? Or
real estate
at some point,
was a side business, yes.
Yeah.
I read this book by Mark Harrelson, How to Wake Up the Financial Genius Inside You, and I got excited about some of the things he said in there, especially the leverage part, you know, low down payment, and the property goes up 10%. You put 10% down, you make 100% return on your investment. So I got really excited about that. And it just moved me into taking a few more seminars, and then I started buying. Like I told you, the first one I bought, and then I would buy maybe 1 to 3 houses a year, and I did that really consistently for about 25 years. That's all I did, 1 to 3 a year.
And it was mostly in the area that you lived in?
Yeah, it was all in Bakersfield. All the houses
okay.
were located in Bakersfield.
When you first started doing it, was there any what kind of feedback did you get either from your household or your folks' household? You're still pretty young. You're a young adult, so you're telling somebody of your plans. Yeah, I'm quitting my job. I'm going to start my own business, and I'm going to buy this stuff, real estate, on the side.
Well, actually, my parents actually loaned us a little bit of money when I started my business, so they've always been very supportive, quite honestly, when it came
okay.
to that. And when I told them that I was buying real estate, of course, they had a little bit of experience there. They said, great. You know, so they were pretty positive, I must say. I got to
okay.
give them, yeah.
And what about your wife?
My wife, you know, she understood that that people that do well, many times they do have real estate, own real estate. And she was okay with it too, being that I had the other full-time career that I was developing. I think if I just went out in the real estate world and started buying houses, maybe even trying to flip houses, I think she would have said, I don't know about this. I'm not real excited. But because I was doing it on the side, there was no problem.
And you really, you didn't do a lot of flips. You were just finding something you wanted to keep.
Bruce, I didn't even know how to flip properties, probably until maybe 12, 15 years ago. That I knew only one thing, and that was buy, negotiate the terms so the tenants hopefully can afford the payment that I have to make, and then manage them and hope that one day they pay off, which they do with time. And that's it. I mean, it was pretty simple game plan.
Well, you know, and I think that's one of the important reasons I'm talking to three different types of panels. I'm in the interviews that I'm doing, there's a panel of women.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's unusual. Most of the time, women are not investors.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if you attended an investment club, it's not mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
People that have been at it a longer time, like yourself. So, you know, this is a long journey. And see, what's interesting, somebody listening to this will go, okay, well, that was kind of methodical. It wasn't like you were a rock star. You just had a plan and you stuck with it. And every year you did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
very methodical.
Yeah. And a lot of ways that was, you know, it's interesting how when we've talked before, how the things do start paying off. And, you know, eventually you have this fleet of things that are paying you every month and you don't have any bills to pay with it.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
when
that,
it gets
when that,
really fun.
That's when it starts, you know, to you just go, holy mackerel. Was being financially independent an important goal for you?
You know, just to give you an idea of the economics back when I took the job with FMC, they paid me $19,000 a year, which was sort of the going rate at that time for the business that I got involved with. My wife worked part-time, a community college teacher. She had her master's from UCLA, so she made like $400 a month. So we were making like a total of $2,000 a month. And after I read Harrelson's book, I said, you know, if I could only make in rental income, net rental income, $2,000, I could be financially independent, $2,000 a month.
Okay.
And so that was my first goal, and it was just a goal that I sort of made up. It wasn't like I had a dream of necessarily being financially independent. It was like, hey, if I can't make it with my job or whatever, maybe this other thing could actually support me.
So the first goal was to get the monthly cash flow to replicate or even replace your monthly job.
Yeah, that was sort of the motivation there to start.
And as this started progressing, did you ever have a written set of goals and say, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna head someplace much different?
Here's what happened. In reality, I probably after, I'm going to say at least 5 years, maybe closer to 7 or 8 years of investing, I might have had, I don't know, 12 houses maybe then, something like that, 12, 13 houses.
Okay.
I accrued a negative cash flow of $2,000 a month. Okay. So my wife told me one day, she said, you know what? We're losing $2,000 a month on these houses that you bought. And I said, well, I knew we were negative, but I didn't realize it was that negative. And
you needed a second job.
I said, oh, my gosh. Now, mind you, I had my business going, and it was a successful business, and I was making pretty good money. But I told her, well, you know, that negative cash flow we can use on our taxes, and that helps the tax situation. That's how much I knew about really what I was doing. Not very much, because obviously you don't do that. You use depreciation allowance, not negative cash flow allowance.
Exactly.
So, you know, I said, I'm still going to do it. I just got to buy better, negotiate the terms better, and be a better manager. So slowly but surely, I mean, it took me a long time just to get where I was making any money each month. A long time.
Yeah.
But I hung in there.
And, you know, I think there's a lot of that's not what people want to hear. Obviously, you know, you wouldn't have anybody run in the back of the room. Just, you know, just take 2 decades, do it slow and easy. And,
yeah.
And not
yeah,
easy,
no,
by the way.
You're not going to sell many tickets.
but you had a full-time business, and this was a part-time thing that really obviously turned into a much bigger thing than you had anticipated.
Thank God I had the income that I could support the houses and keep them, because I didn't sell out, you know, and that would have been one thing that someone might do. They say, oh, man, this is too much. Why am I doing this? I make good money at my career. Why am I going to have these houses they got to deal with and deal with the tenant problems and the repairs and all that stuff? But I guess I felt, because I had been to several seminars, that, hey, you can make it work. You can make it work. Just hang in there and buy better, manage better.
How did you typically buy the homes that you did get?
Most of the houses that I bought were seller financed, or they were existing loans. Back in the day, you could take over a loan without a due on sale clause.
Right.
And so you take a loan over, have the seller carry a second, a very soft second. That's how I tried to get the payment down, with soft second. When I say soft, you know, like a low interest rate, low payment,
right,
amortizing second is what I shot for, and a low down payment, like usually 5 to 10% down would be my down payment. And that was sort of a typical deal.
What was the toughest obstacle you had to overcome in this journey of being a real estate investor?
Probably the toughest obstacle was learning how to make it work. The early days of trying to make it work, finally making progress there, and finally seeing that maybe I could make this thing happen, And then with that, probably this another very difficult time for me is when I hung up the spikes, as we say in baseball, and quit my full-time career that was very, very successful, and go into the and live off the asset income that I had generated. So when I quit, I was making more than what I was making checking fields for growers.
And what year was that?
That was about 8 years ago, roughly.
Okay. A lot of people attempt this business and aren't successful. So you've been successful. What would you say the reason is?
I think the reason, there's several of them. One is passion. You really have to be passionate about what you do. If you're not passionate about real estate and investing, you should be doing something else. I was passionate about it. I attend the seminar. I think I went to over 100 seminars.
Oh my
gosh. I got
gosh.
The education that I needed.
Okay.
And you know, the systems are very, very important, and I was able to delay gratification. My wife says, when are you going to cash these things out so we can do things? And I said, we're doing things now, you know, with the income that we make. That probably will never happen. When Bruce tells us to sell on this next upswing, we'll probably sell some of our lower-end houses, stuff that I don't like as much, but I probably won't sell them all. So,
yeah,
you know,
and I don't know that there's a right answer. In other words, there's very astute people that Mike Cantua's no intention of selling. I don't care what they're worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to make he might have a plan to move them to Orange County or something, but he likes real estate. And so there isn't one size fits all. But I think you said a really important word, delayed gratification,
is
that there's some sacrifice that's necessary to get to something, you know, that's of bigger importance. Did you make a habit of writing down goals?
No, I really didn't. I thought about them, and I know that if you read, you know, what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to write them down, put them on your mirror and all that kind of stuff. But no, I'm a driven person. Actually, I think my advantages I have against other people is I have a fear of failure, actually an insecurity in me that I actually work harder because I'm afraid to fail. As that makes any sense.
Yeah,
I have sort of a fear of not making it happen. I said I was going to do it, now make it happen and do whatever it takes. So I'll work harder, I'll work longer. In baseball, I practiced harder, I longer, and I have that I think I was born with. Maybe my parents, they were pretty strict, so maybe I have a little bit of fear there too, but that I had to make it happen.
Well, to me, that the discipline that you have to make it happen, and you also understood what motivates you. For me, I got fired 5 times in a row, and I realized I don't like other people controlling my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same type of thing where I didn't enjoy that, and I realized I want there to be a day where you can't do harm to my family no matter what you do to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's I think that was a driving force for me, is that I just saw that there were people. Very few examples, you know. It's interesting. I didn't get raised in a wealthy family either, but I did get raised by my dad, who kind of broke the box where he was. You know, he was in West Virginia, raised in the Great Depression, and he was supposed to go to work for the railroad or the coal mine. That was it.
Wow.
And his brothers did that. He didn't. He was an engineer and left, and so he kind of broke the box or the mold that he was given.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I kind of looked at that and said, I was supposed to be a good hard worker and everything, but then somewhere along the line in my late 20s, I realized I can kind of do this on my own. And finding out what motivates you, whether it be fear of failure or fear of getting fired,
yeah.
Or I guess I'm best when I get ticked off. It really helps when I I hear something that makes me, my iron will come out and go, okay, well, that's, I'm glad you said that. That's going to help me.
Yeah. You know, another thing too, Bruce, because I was, had my career, I was really, really busy with it. I worked 6 to 7 days a week, but I had these rental properties. I tried management. I said, why don't you just get them managed? You know, so I tried 3 or 4 companies and it didn't work out. So I'm back in the saddle doing the management myself, but that distraction factor of having the full-time career allowed me to hold the houses because I was so busy, I couldn't even think about even selling them. So I said, okay, when there's a 3 vacancies this month, let's just say, and there's a trash out in one of the houses where the tenant went berserk, and, you know, there might have been a sewer line that you had to replace. It cost you $2,000.
Right.
Well, it's real easy to say, let's just sell them. Well, I really didn't have the time to even think about selling them because I was so distracted with my career.
Right.
So it was a plus.
Kind of running out of time. Last question. What advice would you give to someone looking at this business of real estate for the first time?
I think you got to define what area of the business that you want to be in, and that's one thing. Number two, do I have the passion for the business? In other words, having rental property and flipping properties are sort of the two, you know, making loans, but let's just take those two. Do you, which end of that, which side of the business do you want to be on? Because they're totally different. And there's some people that are really good at flipping property and some people that might be good at holding rental property. So you have to define what area you want to be in the real estate game.
I think you probably have purchased most of what you've bought directly from a human being then.
I'm going to say probably at least, 90% were bought with directly negotiating with the seller.
How did you end up in front of them? Did you run an ad? Do you have a sign?
I did. I ran an ad for 12 years. It said, okay, like everyone else's ads, that I buy houses, but I was competing a little bit, but I ran it every day for 12 years. It said, all cash / full price. So what that meant was I get the call because someone says, wow, you're going to pay me all cash and full price.
There was an or in front of, or in between that, wasn't there?
Exactly. Exactly. Of course, I was pushing for the terms offer. So I would send them like 3 offers, 2 were terms offers, 1 was an all cash. The all cash was 50 cents on the dollar. I wanted them to go to the terms offer. But I said, it made the terms offer look better.
That's a great advertisement. I never heard that story before. That's really a great advertisement. You know, sometimes the best ideas come out of something like that where you go, wow, the response on that was tremendous. I ran an ad one time, and I instead of saying hard money lender, I said money partner.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh. The phone rang off the hook.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
It was an accidental ad, and that was perfect. You basically said the right words, but you were being honest. It's either or.
It's either or. You choose. And hopefully you choose the terms offer because I don't have any money.
I don't have any more cash.
And I don't have a lot of connections, so... If I buy it, I may not buy it. I may say, you know, I just spent it on another deal and say sorry about that.
Yeah.
I can't follow through.
Well, Randy, it's been great talking with you, and I'm looking forward to having you on the panel in front of our audience.
Well, thank you, Bruce, and I always appreciate talking with you and admire you greatly as well.
All right, Randy. Thanks a lot.